Hello, everyone, and welcome to Linux the Rest of Us, episode 164. This is a show about Linux, where we talk about all sorts of Linux news, tips, tricks, upcoming hardware, software, anything that tickles our Linux fancy. Yes, I haven't said that in a while. I've brought it back. I'm going to just put it on the flagpole and let it sit there for everybody to see or listen to, because this is unless you're watching live, in which case, hey, everybody, thank you very much. If you want to join us live, it is Monday nights, 8:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for the time being. And by we, I mean myself, Cody Cooper, a.k.a. Supercoop, and my good friend at the Door-to-Door Geek, a.k.a. Steve McLaughlin. How's it going, Door?
Hey, Cooper. Doing all in all good, beat to hell, but that's being a parent and, you know, having a 9-to-5 job. So I'm doing pretty normal. How about yourself?
I'm doing good. I'm getting some more gaming in. Like last episode, I said I was playing a lot of Street Fighter. I'm playing even more. I've been playing in some local tournaments, some local events. I'm playing in a event at a barcade in a couple days. So if I got knocked down at the tournament, I just turn around and there's a full bar. So I don't think I can really lose.
As long as you're representing.
That's right. I'm repping the Mid-Willamette FGC because those are the guys I train with.
Okay. I thought you were going to represent Podnuts, but that's okay.
The fact of the matter is I'm not sponsored. So if you want to float me some cash, I got expenses, Door. These fight sticks ain't cheap.
Checks in the mail.
Okay. All right. How about you? What have you been up to? I actually saw that you posted something on Google Plus about some gaming today.
Yeah, I'm falling into the nostalgia loop, if you will, where I accidentally got my retro rig up and running, enjoying when I can, of course, that aka 10 minutes a week, playing old Atari games, NES games, Super Nintendo games. And because it's retro rig on Intel NUC, even N64 games run like complete butter. Then I started to look at PS1 ROMs, and I literally looked at like the best PlayStation 1 games, like top 100 list, and I realized all the games sucked and I didn't like any one of them. So then I started thinking about PS2, and of course the only game that came to mind on PS2 is Grand Theft Auto 3. And then I thought, more than likely, it's so old, it would probably run on Linux just fine. So I went and bought brand new, still in shrink wrapped, Grand Theft Auto 3 and Grand Theft Auto Vice City off of eBay for less than $20 total. That's how high demand those games are.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm going to see if I can get both of them running, see if I can have a little bit of fun. And unfortunately, for now, keep them away from the child or children.
All that means is that you're a responsible parent.
Yes, but then I will be the guy who shows them to the kid and says, explosions, and just let them go loose. And my logic is that I'll probably wait till he's 12 or 13 for that.
Well, but that I can understand. But you know what? We're about to go into a rabbit hole here that I could talk about forever. It would be a whole different show. So that's just...
I like rabbits.
Oh, man. You ever had a rabbit's foot keychain?
Yes, but then I realized it sure in the hell wasn't lucky for the rabbit.
I remember seeing one as a kid and thinking, oh, isn't that cool? But then I got one and I could like feel the bones in it and I just threw it away. Mm-hmm. I just threw it away.
Kind of freaky.
I won it like a carnival at grade school or something. I was like, oh, a rabbit's foot. And I was like, no, just threw it, tossed it.
Yeah.
Wasted all those damn tickets on a rabbit's foot.
Well, speaking of tickets, you know, people could email us and get codes for Think Penguin.
Awesome segue.
I'm doing my best, sir. Chris over at Think Penguin, I'm going to just put it like this. I'm feeling in my heart of hearts that companies in general, by their very nature, are untrustworthy and maliciously evil because their only goal is to just make money for the shareholders, for the board, and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple quote-unquote companies out there that I'm really finding I like to deal with, I like to talk to, I like to give money to. And Chris over at Think Penguin is one of them because he might have a label of a company, but the company is him. He is the person. He is the driving force. He is the guy trying to do better by computing in general. So I just cannot encourage people enough. We still do have promo codes. We do have coupon codes. You just email me. I send them to you. I only ask if you do not use them, you please let me know. And I will, give them to somebody else. I have already asked for another round of coupon codes. Once again, we are not shills. We are not We are not just saying positive things about a company because they give us money, aka they've given us nothing. They've given us coupon codes to give away. That's it. So I'm very happy to say that we support people that we like first and foremost. And if Chris does become successful enough to where he can afford genuine advertisement, then I'm going to look at trying to get money from him. But for now, I'm just trying to help him become a bigger force in the world of computing and Linux. And don't forget, it's not just computers. It's not just desktops. It's not just laptops. It's not just mini computers. All kinds of Linux compatible hardware you can get from thinkpenguin.com.
And I got to tell you, as I've said before, meeting him in person at NELF a couple of years back was very cool. And we've already had several listeners email us and ask us for the codes, and we just sent them along, and I hope they got some good hardware out of it. So if you are in the market, definitely send an email to podcast@linuxforthestofus.com. Put Think Penguin in the subject header, and we'll get you one of those codes you can use. We appreciate it.
Yep, and everyone who lets me know that they made the purchase and then tell me how their hardware is doing, I cannot thank you enough. You guys just reaffirmed to me that they are indeed a good company, and they're trying to do everything they can to give good customer support. And I will just say, I've been to now, a number of conferences. He's the only owner of a hardware company, at least that I knew. I'm talking now to where the buck stops. He's the president. He's the founder. He's the CEO. Here's where all the answers get answered. That to me alone was a very refreshing thing. Rare, very rare too. Okay, we were talking about the retro stuff, okay? The tool I used, one of the tools I use that I think is honestly a better tool than average when I'm trying to get older stuff working, it's of course Wine. And, I probably should look at the crossover games application, but for now, I stuck with the free version of it, which is a Wine utility called Play on Linux. Play on Linux, you just load up the application, browse to what game you want to install, click start, put the CD in, and away you go, and it installs and configures everything, and it just works. Well, I believe this is a initiative by the same people. Okay, it's called portmyapps.com. I got this from Venstone. He plused it on Google Plus at Venstone, hiding at Venstone, from a Linux Gamecast. I'm not completely sure what to make of this. I know I'm going to keep my eyes on it, and I know I'm going to keep looking at it. What it bills itself as the easiest, quickest, and least costly way to port Windows software on Mac and Linux, which is basically Wine. That's what Wine's supposed to do. And if you scroll down, you see they talk about this, and they say, send your Windows programs in a zip file here. Linux is coming soon, they say, so it's not fully there yet. So I'm going to take for granted you have to either send applications you yourself created or something that's probably like fallen out of support, like a orphan piece of software. And if you scroll down to references, you can see Play on Linux and Play on Mac are two of the tools that they use. Play on Linux is, again, just a really good, easy tool to load all kinds of Windows software. Just click, bang, and it goes. So if this is going to use that as an engine, then I have high hopes of just bringing over more software. Because I'm a firm believer in this. Choice is the ultimate killer app. If we can say you can come onto Linux and run anything you can imagine, quote unquote, of course, except for iTunes, because iTunes sucks, but almost any other kind of application, that makes us better, in my opinion. So PortMyApps is very interesting. I'll say that. I'm going to keep my eye on it, too. And I'm hoping Venstone will give some more comments about this as it grows.
I do agree. In fact, there's some video streaming software that I may be using to record some of my gaming stuff, which, from what I understand, it's the stuff that's available for Linux is kind of ho-hum. Not very fully featured, and it doesn't work that well. It's something I have to do. I didn't think I'd be playing a lot of games again though that would make me go into sort of a proprietary arena to use it. But everybody has that that one or two, or especially people transitioning from Windows or Mac, have that those, you know, their sort of, you know, their inner circle of apps that they need to use day to day. And if we can provide them a means to use those during a transition or to use them permanently, well, while using Linux, then why not?
Yeah, absolutely. And I do think the biggest issue right now with recording, now if you're talking about emulated games, I think the biggest thing right now with recording emulated games on Linux is getting good frame rate.
Mm-hmm.
I do think it's more processor intensive. I will say, don't hesitate, Venstone on Google Plus, just say you want to record games on Linux and see what he suggests. Something tells me, though, he's going to suggest like a $3,000 computer because it is so resource intensive to do on Linux. But I could be mistaken. I will say that. I could be mistaken.
Well, there's some hardware I could buy, which is a cheaper solution. Some of it's standalone. Some of it is, you know, a video capture card you put into a PC and then use proprietary software on Windows with it. Now, right, whether that would work with this, or if I could use that that capture card with a piece of Linux software, I don't know. I haven't investigated that far yet. So I may end up going with a portable solution. That way I can take it to events and I don't have to lug my machine with me, which would be nice, but we'll have to wait and see. I'll look into it, because if you guys are playing games out there and you do want to maybe get into streaming, you know, Google just bought Twitch. That's a huge, I mean, if you talk about cable cutting, a lot of people are just sitting at home watching game footage now. They don't care about the news or about sports. I mean, it's just, yeah, see, me and you too, brother. Yeah. So, and it's cool because with just the software, just stuff that you have at home, you can get on there and do it. But there's so, I mean, once you sort of dip your toe in that pool and you start to see the content that that is presented on there, some of it's really high quality and some of it you'd start to think to yourself, I wonder if I could do better. And you probably could, but.
Yeah, I ain't gonna lie. I watch what I think of as educational programming on YouTube, science, technology, history kind of stuff. But I also, when I come across a new game on Android or whatever, I first go and I watch videos on it. And when it's a really good game, I accidentally find myself watching maybe a little bit too much video of it. But it's always eye-opening to tell me what I can and can't do, what is possible in the game, regardless if I can do it or not. And unfortunately, there's a thing called speed runs that took up a lot of my time. I'll say that.
Yeah. Yeah. I need to stop talking. I could go on forever about speed runs, yeah. But.
Okay. Well, speaking of development, here's a link I saw, and here's one of the gimmicks. I always tease myself in web development because it's a low barrier of entry, and it's a low barrier of entry because the tools exist on all platforms to create web content of all different magnitudes, whether it just is a single page blog or whether it's an in-depth e-commerce membership site, whatever. It's all just HTML, JavaScript, CSS. And that's like every basic website. Sometimes there's Flash thrown in and CMSs, but it's all basically HTML. And one of the things I'm not proficient at, but I keep learning a little bit here and there, is about CSS. CSS is one of those things that really has exploded the functionality of the web. And from what I believe, it's a much safer alternative to do stuff in CSS versus JavaScript. And I believe it makes things much more accessible to blind users using screen readers. So I found this link over at designzum.com. I don't know where I find these domains, Cody.
Mm.
But I found this one, and it's 5 free CSS editors for Linux. Part of me, when I saw this, I was literally pushed away from it because I don't like the idea of unitasking software a whole lot. I like a software that can do a couple things. So, to my joy, I'll say, most of the things I found are not just CSS editors, but they're HTML, CSS, SVG, all kinds of different editors, and they do CSS. There's a couple in this tool that I've already heard of. I've heard of Bluefish. I used that in the past. Amaya. I've used that one too. Gedit is the one that always gets kind of mentioned because it really can do really good color syntax highlighting. It's a very underrated tool, I'll say that. But there's one in here called CSSED. This is one that I'm going to have to look at because this looks like a dedicated CSS one. So hopefully, if I just use this one for a little bit, I'll understand CSS better and then be able to use it in Bluefish. And the other one I use is Blue Griffin. I believe they're both HTML editors. I've used both of them to do HTML development kind of stuff. You can never have too many tools, is my logic.
Nope, never too many.
And DesignZum. Just because they had a dedicated Linux posting, that just means I have to, you know, keep my eye on them now, see if they have any good things hanging around.
There you go.
Okay, then after that, I found, I'm not an audio nerd. I'm not an editing nerd with audio. I like doing it, and I do it for Podnuts, but mostly I just know what I know, and I'm blind to everything else going on in the audio editors. But I found this one, and this one has me so close to really devoting some time into it, especially if I knew how it was pronounced. It looks like it's Ocean Audio, maybe? O-C-E-N Audio?
O-C-E-N? Yeah, or Ocean Audio.
Ocean Audio, yeah, I'll get for that. This is completely cross-platform, okay? Windows, Mac, and Linux. It also has availability to use VST plugins. Those two right there make it immediately grab my attention pretty viciously. But one of the things that this has available to it, which I will say I don't completely understand, is a full-featured spectrogram. Full-featured spectrogram, I believe, gives me, the editor, much better ability to isolate certain types of background noise or clicks or anomalies in the audio and pull them out of the audio. I believe that's what this can do.
I really dig this interface. It's nice and clean. I mean, dude, you've opened up some digital audio workstations before, and you just like, huh? It's just, wait, so what's going on? This looks pretty straightforward, and it looks like it's going to be a powerful tool, but it is, at least the screenshots that they provided, make it look pretty easy for the layman to at least look and see what's going on.
Yeah, too many audio editors. I spend literally 10 minutes figuring out how to open a file and just how to select audio kind of thing. And this at least looks, its first and foremost goal is to be simple and then bring on power to it kind of thing. So I'm definitely going to try it out. And that's at ocenaudio.com.br, which I believe is Brazilian. Of course, I could be mistaken.
That's what I thought. Either that or... the Bears are trying to get their own, you know, domain. Bear.
Sure, I don't know. So I'm gonna try to find time to play with this. Check this out. I know I can't use it in a quote unquote full production environment until I'm very confident of its abilities, and when I'm confident about the licensing of it, I'll feel even better. Because if it is free to distribute, that means I can put it in my virtual machine for audio editing and make it a official tool that I use. Because don't get me wrong, Audacity, really powerful, good tool. Qtractor, crazy powerful, really good tool. No tool is perfect. This might be just another link in the chain of my tools to make it easier and faster, or this might replace one of those other tools just because it meets my needs a little bit better. I'll have to find out.
Yeah, man, give it a whirl. Report back.
Yeah, okay. I'm not going to lie. This next one, Cody, confused me to no end. I literally had to read this a little bit, which, of course, just caused me to have a headache and take a break and drink some more caffeine. But I muscled through it. Okay. This is, again, at Xmodo, whatever. We brought this up in the past. The title of the article is, How to Access Linux Command Cheat Sheets from the Command Line. It's like meta. How to access Linux command cheat sheets from the command line. Okay, that's confusing. So I literally had to load it and play with it. What it is, it's like a much better in the Windows world help or man in the Linux world. This to me gives me much more options, much more information, and a lot of examples. I live off of examples. So this might be one of those things that I literally install on everything I run and just keep it there for when I need it.
This does look cool.
I'm a sucker for examples. Like, you can just, like, if you want to understand diff. Diff is one of those things you only need it if you need it, and if you don't know you need it, you have no idea what it is. Diff basically scans two different things, shows you the differences. That's diff. For instance, if you want to know how the diff commands work, you just literally type in cheat space diff, and it gives you examples of a, you know, sample input you can type in to, you know, and with descriptions so you know what you're doing. So you don't have to literally stop what you're doing, type something else, jump into something else, jump into a web browser, or go through the man and page down, page down, page down, and look what you're looking for. You can just literally type cheat space diff.
Now, when I've heard of something like this before, and I think we may have talked about this before, maybe not on the show, but the one thing I remember not liking about it, but I just figured out a solution to the problem, is that if I'm going to have a reference, like a cheat sheet, I don't want it to appear... I don't know how I'd feel about it appearing within the terminal window. You know what I mean? Because that's like, it's like putting a map on top of my workspace when I need to do work underneath the map. You know what I mean? But I could just open up another terminal window and just have that there and have it side by side, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is really big if you're doing server adminning, because typically you have multiple terminal sessions open, or you use a tool like Terminate, I believe it's called, where you can literally split the window into multiple things.
Multiple panes, right.
Yeah, right. So to me, that's really who this is utterly geared towards. I think of this as simplifying my Google searching.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of having a terminal and a browser open, because I would literally be looking for these kinds of examples when I go to Google searching for Linux diff examples. You know what I mean?
Right.
I can just type it here and get it. So I would probably always have two terminal windows open, because to have one open and literally run through examples and then, you know, yeah, that can become a bit painful, I would think.
Mm. Yeah. But yeah, being able to do that and the splitting into different panes, that does sound cool.
Yeah. Okay, this next one I had to mention only because, again, it was interesting. I don't see myself ever doing this unless I have to, and I don't see myself ever having to. But this might be a really good learning experience for people out there. That's the way I'll put this. There's no doubt in my mind you will understand more if you use this than any degree, and it's at minimal.linux-bg.org. No idea what the BG stands for, but it's called Minimal Linux Live. Minimal Linux Live is a set of Linux shell scripts with automatically build a minimal live Linux OS based off of the Linux kernel and BusyBox. Okay, BusyBox doesn't give you the full set of commands. So if you're a big command line junkie, you know a whole broad range of commands, then you have to use BusyBox. Some of those commands will not work. You'll have to find alternatives to them, or you'll have to find standalone applications that do what you need to do. But there's no doubt in my mind, if you build this, it will be so small and so light and so quick. This, to me, could be the exact way for you to create that micro perfect niche distro to do what you need to do.
Yeah, it would be cool to get in there and use this to give you some more understanding. And then, yeah, if you're going to go minimal, this looks like a great base.
Yeah, I can honestly see this is kind of on the same angle as using a virtual machine or using Docker. You could build something so small and tiny, you launch it in a VM, the amount of resources it would need is so minimal, but you could use it as like a unitasking, isolated computer.
Mm-hmm.
And it does have a good amount of tools available to it. BusyBox has grown a lot, I will say that. For instance, on my Android device, I've had BusyBox installed now for 4 years. And when the going gets tough, I actually do load a terminal on my Android device and load terminal IDE keyboard and get to my hacking, fixing or breaking something.
Mm. That's cool. It's a good find.
Yeah. One more command line thing. I wasn't sure how to really even think about this one. This was, again, at xmodu, whatever. com. What are better alternatives to basic command line utilities? Here's the gimmick. What I really believe this whole article is, it's just reminding us we don't always have to use the same tools everyone else has used in the past.
Right.
Like the first example is df-h. Df shows you the available, the disk information and how much free space is on your hard disk. But you have to make it human readable, unless, of course, you are very accustomed to looking at it. So you always have to type df space dash h. Then you can see the information in human readable numbers of gigabytes and megabytes kind of thing. The one that they show you the alternative for is called DFC. DFC defaults to being human readable, but also basically gives you like little bar graphs, line graphs, I guess, showing you how filled your drive is. So it goes from green to yellow to red. So it's a much easier visual indicator of what's going on.
That is cool. And I'm colorblind. I can't distinguish like colors, but I'm looking at this and you can still, even though it is color-based, you can tell based on the icons they're using how full each of these, or how much resources each of these processes is taking up, and that's very cool.
Yeah, because there's like 20 things to fill up the bar, so if it's only 3, you know, it's very empty. If it's 15, it's mostly full.
Kind right.
of thing. And there's more on this list called dog. I've never heard of dog. ADVCP, I'm guessing that's an advanced copy tool, which also gives you a progress meter, which is always good. The one at the bottom that caught me off guard, they call the Silver Searcher, which I will say is a great name, just a fantastic name. It immediately makes me want to use it. So I'm going to have to, you know, read more of this and take a look at it. Very interesting tools nonetheless, so I definitely encourage people to check this link out.
Looks good. Yeah, check it out and get back to us. Let us know what you think of it soon.
Yeah, and there's one here for Mr. Martin Rambo Bando called MTR, which is short for My Trace Route.
Yeah.
There's no doubt in my mind, if he's at a client's place and they're having issues with network connectivity or something involving network or DNS, this is the kind of thing that might help shed light on what's going on over the network.
Anything to get that man home earlier. I'm all for it. Yeah. Guy works like
exactly.
A beast. He's working so hard. He's even working during this show. You just don't even hear or see him. He's in the background, rattling away on a keyboard, making sure our show notes are up to date. So thank you, Mike.
Well, yeah, I just take for granted if he's breathing, he's working.
Yep. Okay. Well, speaking of Martin Obando, he and Dor and I share a Voxer chat, and he was asking the two of us. And this would be a good thing to bring up right now because, you know, we're talking, you know, we're just about back to school time. You know, people already started to think of, you know, Christmas gifts for their kids. So with the popularity in Chromebooks nowadays, some parents, especially some parents on that are listening to this show, are probably thinking, you know, for their kid that's in high school, maybe even junior high, I should probably get them a Chromebook if their, you know, educational institution isn't providing them. To all the students already. But now, with the popularity of them, with the market so saturated with different models, the question that Martin posed to us is, which one should I buy for my son? Now, his son is, I think, 14, 15, somewhere in there, and he's in high school, okay? And he posed the question to us, which model of Chromebook should I buy for my son? And Dor said, go ahead, sorry.
Here's one of the problems with Chromebooks is there's a lot of them. Okay.
Yep.
You have certain companies just trying to basically almost flood the market, making unbelievable amounts of them. And to be honest, it's not really a lot, but it's a lot at first glance. Samsung, HP, Lenovo, Asus, and Dell. Most of those manufacturers make up to 5 types of Chromebooks. And it's not really clear what the hell's the difference between them, because there's really not a whole lot of differences between them. I'm a fan of Asus hardware and Acer hardware. HP business class seems really good. Chromebooks typically are not business class. Dell Business Class, I like. Chromebooks are typically not business class. Lenovo, I haven't touched. So that could be good, I don't know. But I know Asus and Acer are the two that I seem to like. And the old faithful, as I put it, the Acer C720, I believe it is.
Yeah.
I believe was the first retail Chromebook. They've revved it. They put it a little bit more up to date, but it's basically the same device, and it's still one of the cheaper Chrome devices. And to be honest, I feel like it meets a lot of quote-unquote basic needs.
Well, the C700 series, Dor and I own C710s that we got almost 2 years ago. Yeah. And mine is, well, it's seen better days. I've carried it around with me everywhere. It's a fantastic little machine. I love it to death. It's a little 11.6-inch, you know, Chromebook, but my son ripped the bottom panel off and ruined a bunch of the tech, so it's literally adhered to the bottom of the Chromebook with Gorilla tape so that it can hold the hard drive in place. But now I'm having issues with the touchpad, so I have to use a mouse with it. So it's like now I'm packing extra accessories just to use the Chromebook.
Yeah.
So, and go ahead.
And I'll say mine, I'm not using to that degree, but the only thing that about it that I don't really like is the battery life. The battery life on it is not great. It's fair. It's comparable to what laptops were 2 years ago, 3 years ago, where you get like 2 hours, 2.5 hours, depending on if you're watching video or in full screen brightness. But you shot a link out to both of us today for the Asus Chromebook C200 and C300. Both of them look like you can get up to 10 hours of battery life. Yeah. You had me at 10 hours. Okay.
Yeah, in relation to what Dor said too, I'm a big fan of Asus hardware. I've owned their tablets, their laptops, you know, all sorts of computer drives, motherboards. I'm building a new PC right now. Just bought a new Asus motherboard. Love them as a manufacturer. Great customer service. Great reviews. Just great products. And I saw an advertisement about a month ago because I was thinking, heading into travel season for me, that's fall. I may need a new companion, and I would rather just get a new Chromebook because the one I have now has done very well. And I saw these two models. There's the C300 and the C200. They're almost identical models. One is the C200 is $229, and the C300 is only $20 more at $249.99. But the C200 is 11.6-inch, whereas the C300 is a 13.3-inch. And for those of you who have never seen a 13.3-inch, if you've ever seen like the MacBook Air or even just the lower end, the smaller MacBook Pros, those are all 13.3-inch laptops. So that to me is like the sweet spot. For laptops, a 13.3 to 14 inch is fantastic. If I get up to the 15.6 or 15.4, it's like a lunch tray. And then if I go to like the 17 inch laptop, it's like that's not even mobile. That's a desktop replacement. And chances are you're spending way too much money for all the features in there just to make it mobile. Go build yourself a couple of kick ass PCs. But 13.3 inch was great. And to see it, my pick hands down was the C300 for $250, which is what the Samsung Chromebook debuted 2 years ago at for much lower specs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's the whole thing. Samsung and a lot of other manufacturers are really hitting hard with the ARM processor. And don't get me wrong, I'm a big fan of ARM processors. But these, are Acer Chromebooks, and these Asus Chromebooks all have Intel processors in them. Intel processors for the longest time meant much worse battery life. These are not your AKA typical Intel processors. These are, what's the word?
The Bay Trail.
Bay Trail M processors. Yep. So they're specifically mobile processors. Okay. Just doing quick searching, Lil Putin said the C200 up to 12.5 hours of battery life. And the other site I saw for the C300 said typically 10.5 to 11.5 hours of battery life. That on Intel processor to me is phenomenal.
Yes.
Phenomenal, just right there. And the price is honestly hard to beat. Really hard to beat. $250 steal.
And when I'm looking at devices, like I owned, or I still have it, the HTC One, the M7 model, and I have my Google Nexus 5 now. When I'm buying any sort of devices to be used via wireless in my home, now I have a router, an Asus router, actually. I'm not trying to plug Asus. I just forgot that. That does 802.11ac, which is above N as far as signal strength and performance goes. So if you have the capability to do that in your home, then why not buy a device that can at least support it? Out of the box, these two do not. However, it is coming through a software update within the next quarter, which is good. But yeah, I mean, you look at the 2 gigs of RAM for, you know, a standard Chromebook, that's fine. Dude, for less than $40, you could at least double, if not triple that. And taking these apart, I mean, you don't have to take it apart. It's just a panel that comes off the bottom. You plug another, you know, you double up the RAM real quick, and then that's going to make it a lot more snappy. It's a 16 gig SSD inside. But to be honest, and that's another reason why I like the Chromebook. And I don't know if I told this earlier, because when we got our C710s, we did a big review on it. We've talked about it since. But I was listening to an episode of Nightwise recently where he was talking about all the items he takes with him day to day in his bag. And he said something that I don't know if I told him this a while ago or if he listened to me talk about it on another show. But anything that I carry with me, if I somehow had it stolen or if I lost the bag, I mean, it sucks to think that I lost some nice kit, but I don't have to worry about it because I don't have anything important on there that isn't either locked down or I was just using it as a shell to access it from the cloud. So people will be like, only a 16 gig hard drive. It's like, well, yeah, but you're not, you know, you shouldn't be archiving video on this thing. You're not putting your music collection on it. You know, it's literally a workstation. Yeah. So, I bought, and okay, here's another great thing too. Two USB 2.0 ports, or excuse me, one USB 2.0 port and one USB 3 port. So right. If you really want some performance and you want to throw some files on there or off of it really quickly or have some nice access, get yourself a nice Patriot 32 gig USB 3 drive that you can get them for like less than $30 now. And man, you could just throw stuff back and forth on that thing like nobody's business. If you want to watch a video on there, throw it on that thing. It's just going to read it right off there super quick. I'm sure you can find some other, you know, models on sale, you know, wherever. That was just the brand I happened to pick because I read some good reviews on it. But yeah, overall, for the money, I would suggest the Asus C300.
Yeah, and I will say Martin found us a link on Amazon. C300s for $229 on Amazon right now.
Oh, wow.
For $229, that's just a steal. I mean, really. Man, okay. We have to stop talking about them, though. Oh, and now Martin's rubbing it in that the C300 also has HDMI.
Yep.
Okay, there will be a link to the C300 on Amazon in the show notes. Just let everyone know if you want to check them out and you're just wanting to check the next app. Well, that's not, but here's the gimmick. This hardware, to be honest, has me a little giddy. I'm almost now looking forward to trying to get my next Chromebook because honestly, I love the functionality and the super lightness I get with my Chromebook. Yeah, I could try to go with an Ultrabook, but I'm literally spending like $1,000.
Yeah, dude.
And the, most of the stuff I quote unquote need to do, all I need is a Chromebook. Granted, the stuff I want to do, I can wait till I get home. But the stuff I need to do, I need a Chromebook. So
right.
These look really good. But then you hit me? Did I hit you? I think Van Stone might hit me. I don't know. Somebody else on Google Plus hit me with another link. And I am a fan of HP. Here's a good example of how I'm a fan of HP. HP makes a 7-inch phone not available in the US that if I had a chance, I might actually get. But they also released a slate book, it's called. And I knew I heard the term slate book before. I have no idea where I heard it at. Okay. The other Chromebook, the big one, was 13.3. And I'm with you. I had a couple 11-inch devices, and 11-inch is a little tiny.
Yeah, 13, it's okay. But
yeah. 13 gives you a little bit of pinky room, as I put it.
Right.
This, literally, I've been thinking about all day now. HP slate book, 14-inch, that runs Android.
Yep.
Yeah, full keyboard, full screen, full ports, running Android.
And it's a touchscreen, too.
Oh, and it's a touchscreen. I could literally see, because here's the gimmick. I'm not going to lie to people. I spend more time than I care to admit on my Android device doing productivity types things, whether it's replying to emails, typing out notes, setting up if this, then that configurations, doing that kind of stuff. It would be much easier on a full keyboard. And I do not want to carry around full like Bluetooth keyboards and then have my tablet. To me, I don't like that combination.
Oh, come on, Dor, you can do it.
Well, and to be honest, I was in love with owning a tablet, with the idea of owning a tablet. When I got the tablet, I barely used it. I literally barely used it, maybe once a week for 20, 30 minutes at most. Now, my son, he abuses it for hours a day. Me, no. If you give me a full keyboard and you give me access to all the apps that I bring up on like Android App Addicts, oh, there's more than a couple things I know I can abuse, like utterly abuse on my Android device. So this looks really nice to me, and I did not catch a price, $279 to $249. Again, I think it's a very fair price.
No. That's the range of HP's current Chromebook line. This is the Slatebook. This is actually $429.99.
Why more?
But here's the thing, though, right? You think, oh, that's quite the jump, okay? It is a full 14-inch HP book, right? It has an NVIDIA Tegra 4 in it. With a 1080p touchscreen, 9-hour battery life. Yeah, so it's got the battery life, it's larger, has the kick-ass processor in it, and it's a full 1080p screen.
Yeah.
So,
oh man.
So think about this from a gaming perspective. The Tegra 4 is gonna. I mean, I would be willing to bet that you could throw that version of Portal and Half-Life on this.
Mm-hmm.
That was made for the NVIDIA Shield.
And you could probably throw Grand Theft Auto 3, Grand Theft Auto Vice City, Grand Theft Auto San Andreas, all of those Rockstar games that are also available on Android, you could probably load on this and run like lightning.
Right.
And I'll say this. I talked a little bit earlier about, I'm not sure if I was talking to Cody, I don't remember if it was on order. I'm not even sure if I can get my PS3 controller working in Linux with Wine to play Grand Theft Auto on my desktop computers. I already know using Tiny Keymapper or a 6-axis, or there's another application too. There's no doubt in my mind I can get my PS3 controller, because I already have, get it working in Android as a full remote. So I literally could use this type, and then connect via Bluetooth controller and bang out some games too. $429. Man, that's a pretty display too.
And I really dig the color palette on the machine itself, the yellow bezel with the black. It just looks cool.
It is yellow. I didn't catch that.
Yeah, yeah. From a design perspective, like, that does really make it stand out. You know what I mean? So, I mean, you're seeing all, well, even if you scroll down, if you see some of the Chromebooks, you know, it's like, oh, gotta have that all metal finish, you know. It looks like another competing product. But if anyone were to see this, they would probably just come, like, if you were using this just like at the food court in the mall or at, you know, or wherever, you know, people would probably walk up and go, hey, what is that?
Food court at the mall. Yes. And now, see, here to me is the deciding, here's where the fork happens, okay? If I was still in college, if I was still in school, I would probably get more out of the Chromebook, doing more school-oriented tasks. Me, older, doing older life tasks, and wanting to have fun when I can have fun, I think this 14-inch Android laptop is a better way. And I used to be infatuated with the idea of folding my screen back all the way or detaching my screen and using it as a tablet. After owning now 3 tablets, I am no longer infatuated with the idea of a tablet. I have no problem with a keyboard.
See, I still have an original Nexus 7, and I use it all the time for just watching video. I like at, you know, if I'm at work, I throw video on it, or, you know, for breaks or my lunch or whatever. And then if I'm in bed, I mean, if I'm not reading an ebook, which as of late is quite rare, I'm usually just watching YouTube on it. So it's become more of a consumption device for me rather than just like an on-the-go replacement for all my needs, because I have my phone for that. And it almost seems silly for me to set tethering on my phone, you know, to get a signal on my tablet and then throw my phone in my pocket when I could just bypass the tablet altogether. You know what I mean? And especially for, oh, dude, I got to play with an LG G3 the other day.
Oh, yeah. Pretty.
Oh, baby. Wow. Yeah, I mean, any of these 5.7, 8, 9-inch phones, I mean, that's where it's at as far as, you know, I'm on the go, I need to do anything, and just do it on there. I mean, anything below 4.7 inches is pretty tiny, but...
Yeah, and I will say, the alternative to the HP SlateBook 14-inch, newer device, so it wouldn't shock me if it's slightly better hardware and newer version of Android, there is a Lenovo A10, 10-inch, smaller, convertible laptop, fold back to a tablet, says it's 9 hours of battery life, and a whopping 39 hours of audio playback with the display turned off. So if you want the tablet type, maybe the Lenovo A10 is up your alley. If you're okay with the touchscreen and the keyboard, the HP. The Lenovo is cheaper too, by the way.
See, I like Lenovo stuff too, but I cannot get over that. Like there's a Windows, or is it the Yoga? Lenovo. They make the Windows the convertible laptop. Just shut up. Just I hate seeing a lap, because, you know, like I'm looking at the photo of it right now, and you know what I'm thinking about? How dirty those keys are getting right now. That's all I can think about is, like, I don't care about the touchscreen. Oh, isn't that a cool little clock widget? No, how filthy are those keys getting right now? I'm going to have to use those later. That's just the stupidest way to just flip it back around. Just leave the keyboard facing up. Oh, but it's hard for me to reach another 6 inches. Just shut up. I can't. Oh, it just bothers me seeing it. It's like, I don't know. How I'm feeling right now is probably when, like, someone felt when they first saw someone, like, ride in a car. You're just like, but we already have horses. It's, like, against God or what. I don't know.
There's nothing wrong with the horses.
Right. Yeah. I don't need a logo. Most nothing. We're gonna walk to New York. Yeah, okay. All right. Yeah, I don't know. I just see it. I just want to say, get off my lawn.
Exactly. Now, I have a question for you, Cody. I'm not going to lie. You know that my memory is a joke.
Yeah.
Comical, ridiculous, and shocking. Sometimes that's how bad it is. But I did not catch why people on Google Plus said that you, like, kind of predicted the future about XBMC.
Oh.
They, like, insinuated that you were right after... something like that?
Yes. Well, somebody was... Well, I can't remember who it was. I'll have to look back and give them a shout-out next episode, but... Somebody posted on Google Plus about XBMC, I had a hand in their recent name change, or they finally came to their senses, something along those lines. Because XBMC, as it stands, is no more.
Yeah.
In name, they renamed it. And they renamed it to Kodi, KODI. Oh, it was Chuck Green who posted it, I think. Initially.
Gotcha.
Rhino in the house. Big shout out to Rhino. But it's KODI, which is actually how I spelled my name when I was, going through a phase as a child. I wanted to
be... When you were leet.
Right. Well, I had to be different, even though I was the only Cody in the whole school. Like if you think of, like George Carlin used to talk about, like, those white names, you know, like Trent and Trevor and Kyle and Chad, and one of them was Cody.
Brandon.
And I was, yeah, and I always Brandon. Just kind of shrunk. I was like, oh, I'm not even white, you know what I mean? But yeah, I mean, but yeah, like, if you go and poll, you know, schools nowadays, are there any Codys here? There's at least like 30, you know, in every school. And that just goes to show that I set the trend. But more importantly, when I was a kid, I was the only Cody in school, so I changed mine to KODI because I was like, I want to be different. And then for a while, I changed my name to Wesley, and it wasn't because of Wesley Crusher, but it was this host on this Nickelodeon game show named Wesley, and I just thought, Wesley's so cool. I changed my name to Wes, and my parents were like, whatever. It'll last a week. It lasted about a month. But anyway, XBMC is now known as Kodi, and K-O-D-I. And the O in the logo is actually a play, a little play symbol in there. So it's like a button. And I thought that was very cool. So yeah, at least 100 people. Just like, hey, did you see this? Like, wink, wink. Like, and you know, like they almost expected me to, you know, make an announcement like I'm working for them now or something. I was just like, yeah, I saw that this morning. That's very cool. I appreciate it. You know, finally, I'm getting some recognition here. And out of all of the, well, and here's the thing too. Do you know what XBMC stands for, Dor?
Xbox Media Center.
Right, and because it was the original Xbox Media Center on the original Xbox, okay, which is now, I mean, it's over a decade old. It's like, I think it's like actually 12 years old now. It's old.
Yeah.
So yeah, first of all, why not distance yourself from Microsoft? Number one, okay. Number two, it's obviously they've made some advances on it since then. Why not rebrand it? So yeah, I'm really looking forward to it because, dude, I use, especially on Android and on Linux, I use a variety of media players when it comes to audio and video and vice versa. And I have yet to set up, I've been saying this forever, I need to get Chuck Litchfield to give me a hand because he's got quite a cool little setup. We need to get him on the show. He has a great home theater computer gone nightmare story, which we need to bring him on for. But yeah, I want to set up XBMC for a home theater because I should put a photo. I'll put a photo on Google Plus. Actually, it should be up by the time you see this. In my living room, when we bought the house, I had this huge wall right as soon as you walk in, and I thought I want to put something cool there. So we put our DVD collection there because it's like 400 movies, right? So we put these dedicated shelves into the wall, like on brackets, right? And it houses
a notebook, Ghost, stuff like that.
Hey, don't. First of all, my wife has never seen the notebook. I've seen the notebook, but my wife hasn't seen it. And it came out after we were dating, so I don't know how that happened.
I don't want to know.
I don't know. I think that she's just starting to get senile. You know, two kids, you know, plays things with the hormones and all that. But Ghost, dude, anything with Swayze in it, I don't care what it is, I'll watch it. It could be a honey commercial, I don't care. But anyway, I got these 400 DVDs on these huge dedicated shelves, and I can't think of the last time that I busted one open and watched it. It's been at least 2 or 3 years. They're just sitting there. I dust them every month, and it's just sad. So I need to rip them, and I want to have them on. Then I'm going to try Kodi. There's a few other home media solutions that people have suggested that I use. I might as well go with the namesake first, right?
Oh, yeah, exactly. Well, they were so overdue a name. I seriously think that they changed their name to XBMC, thinking people would forget the X stood for Xbox.
Right.
Because I don't think they've really ran on the original Xbox for years, years, years now. So they're way overdue. I'm not going to lie. When I looked at them last, there was something about them that really rubbed me the wrong way. And this was probably 3 years ago or more. I have been a Plex guy for years now, literally 2 years now. Plex does everything I need. Plex works on Android. Plex works on Roku. Plex works on Chromecast. Plex works on desktops. I didn't see a need for anything else. Then I found RetroRig and found out RetroRig is basically an add-on to XBMC. And I'm the guy who always says anything with add-ons is going to be better than something without add-ons. So I think I need to basically, give it a genuine install in my network and literally play with it some more because it's not what I remember it being, put it that way.
Yeah, yeah. I was really giddy when I saw that Chromecast got that Plex support.
Yeah.
Oh, and I want to throw this out there, too. Well, can we roll this in? Recently, in the past couple weeks, was the one-year anniversary of the Chromecast.
Yep. Went on sale, you get 3 months of Google Play Music and the Chromecast for $30.
That's just insane. Mm-hmm. My boss, this is so funny. I was at work the other night, and she called me. She goes, "Are you have a minute?" I said, "Yeah, no problem. What's going on?" She goes, "Well, it's a personal issue." I said, "Okay." She goes, "We just bought a new TV, and tell me all you know about this Chromecast thing." And I just started laughing. I just unloaded on her. She's like, "Why wouldn't anyone?" She basically says like, why doesn't everyone own one of these? I was like, I know, just buy one, go home. She loves it. We have three in my house. Yeah. We just use it all the time. But here's an issue I had with it. My wife, now I don't know if the two are related or not, okay? But my wife had a software update on her Samsung Galaxy Note 2. I believe it was just a hard update from Samsung on her phone. And then shortly thereafter, I couldn't connect any of my devices to any of the Chromecasts in the house. I don't know if any of you have experienced this issue before. I tried unplugging them from power, plugging it back in. They were still connected to my Wi-Fi network. Anyway, long story short, did some a little bit of research. Once every 3 months, they suggest that you actually just power cycle your router and modem so that the Chromecast connect and disconnect from it. Otherwise, they kind of get overlogged and that issue can arise. So if you've ever had that happen, there's a solution for you.
Yeah, I will say, once in a while, there's Chromecast updates that come out. And whenever I notice I get a Chromecast update, I literally lean behind my TV. There's a button on the Chromecast. I hold that button for at least 10 seconds, I want to say. And it basically does a hard factory reboot on the Chromecast. And I let it reboot, and then I reset it back up. I reconnect it to my access point, and then it runs really good again. I've had to do that, I want to say, twice so far. It's just one of those things. I think it's like once in a while, you have to reboot your Android device. Once in a while, you got to reboot your Chromecast. It is what I absolutely believe. And yes, it is the stupidest, easiest, most functional piece of hardware anyone can buy for less than $500.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I'll say, quick rewind. I never understood this, but this is utterly ridiculously true. People buy music in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, up to the day. You buy music and you almost near constantly listen to music. Constantly. So the bang for buck we get with music, I think it's really good. Really high return on investment because we listen to it so much. Movies have never gotten large amounts of replays, I think, in anyone's house, even if it's The Princess Bride or even if it's Star Wars Episode 4. There's only so much you can actually sit down and watch those things. So no one ever gets a good return on investment when it comes to buying videos, especially when you have to literally stop what you're doing, think, walk over, open up a shelf, open up a case, pull out a disc, go over to your thing, hit eject, put it in, close it, change the input, change the input, change the input, and then hit play. And then you got to wait for the stupid pre-roll stuff that you can't skip.
Yeah.
That, to me, is the barrier of entry that really made a lot of people mad. Getting it on a centralized NAS, centralized place where you can literally just load XBMC or Plex or whatever and just hit play, I think makes it much more possible for people to watch video that they, quote unquote, purchased in any shape, way, or form.
Right, because, you know, there are some people, I don't know of any personally, that might think, oh, I want to watch that. Oh, man, but it's all the way over there on that dedicated shelf I have in my living room. Ah, forget it. And then they don't watch whatever.
Yeah. And then they just watch Duck Dynasty.
Oh, God. Yeah. I tried, dude. I tried. Actually, it's so funny. That's another story. But yeah, I hate that show. And
How can it be called Duck Dynasty? There's no ducks in the show. Next.
I saw some ducks in the one episode I saw.
Okay. I don't watch it. I don't know.
Okay. But yeah, I need to set up a media center. I got a vacation coming up sometime soon, but then I have a week long trip I'm taking. I need to find. Well, I want to take my Chromecast with me, but was it Nelf? They have the HDMI box linked up to the TV at the hotel there, and then you have to pay daily to have access to that box to plug stuff into it.
Yeah.
Ugh. So I was honestly thinking, as I'm going to be in Anaheim, California for a week, I was thinking about shipping one of my Asus monitors down there to where I could play some games and watch movies while I'm at the hotel.
But gotcha. Okay. There's just one more link I would throw out there, and it literally just hit my brain.
Hit you like a wet catfish.
Yeah, but it just doesn't stink. Okay. I cannot encourage people enough. Convenience is lack of power, lack of control. Okay. I highly encourage everyone, whenever you set up any kind of NAS for your media sharing, media distribution, internal documents, whatever you're setting up a NAS to, whether it's backups or anything else, don't buy dedicated solutions. Don't buy devices where you do not control the entire stack from beginning to end. Don't buy things you don't control, like Synology.
You're right.
I heard about these years ago. Chris Berry, Podnuts guy, touting how great they are, how great they are, how easy they are, how fantastic they are,
fantastic.
And then I looked at the price and I understood why he liked them, because they were really expensive. But I always said, you know, you understand you don't really control this device. You have no idea what's going on this back end. You only have your interface to do what you need to do, and you don't actually have control over it. Well, I don't know how popular this is. I don't know how normal this is. I don't know how often this happens, but Synology gets infected with Synolocker. Okay? It's a ransomware strain that when it hits your Windows box and it sees a Synology NAS on the network, it goes and infects the NAS and basically can encrypt the entire friggin' thing. This is why people need to hear. I'll say this: take responsibility in your NASing. Okay, take a computer, put it on the side, build it. Use Ubuntu, use Debian, use Mint, use Fedora, use Slackware, use whatever you want to use. But build it yourself, monitor it yourself, monitor the updates to it, apply the update to it yourself. You will never get a safer device than that. You can even use one of the NAS type solutions like NAS for Free or whatever, one of those other ones. You will never get more secure than owning and running it yourself. Stop putting faith and responsibility in companies that once they get your money, they don't care about you. Okay. Synology got your money when you bought the device. After that, they don't care. All they want to do is make sure you're happy enough that when you need a new device, you come back to them.
Yeah.
Hopefully this is the kind of thing that turns people away from buying these stupid devices. And I call them stupid devices because they think you, a user, are too stupid to actually admin it.
And by God, buy some good name brand hard drives.
Yeah.
I have my friends and family members and even some people on Google Plus. I can't remember who sent it to me lately, but sent me a link to some Hitachi drive. Hey, what do you think of this? I go, I think it's a Hitachi. Yeah. And I sent them a link with reviews of like, you know, the top 10 Hitachi drives. And guess what? They didn't stack up that well versus the industry standard. If you're going to buy cheap ketchup, sure. If you're going to buy, you know, the bread at the store that just says white bread in a bag and it's just white bread, no bag, no label, no scam, sure, whatever. But if you're buying crap hardware and it fails, that's your fault. I understand you're on a budget, but I mean, if you're talking especially about a NAS, I mean, forget using it as a media center. Oh no, I lost all my movies. Okay, whatever. You can just burn them again if you still have the disk. But if you're talking about creating like a backup solution, I mean, that's chances are the stuff you're putting on there is pretty important. So yeah, spend the extra money, get some nice, you know, Western Digital Caviar drives. There's some nice Seagate ones as well. And didn't Scott Moulton say to try not to buy drives over, was it 500 gigs or 600 gigs or a terabyte or something like that?
Well, no. He wants everybody to buy drives more than 500 gigs so he stays in business as long as possible. The bottom line is once you go above 500 gigs in density and spinning disk platters, the density on the disk becomes so great the error correction has to work a lot harder, i.e. that drive is much more prone to failure, to random failure. When you get under 500 gigs, you have much less likely odds of catastrophic disk failure. So if you're looking for stability, smaller size drives typically give you better longevity. Yeah.
And I hate to put you on the spot here, but I got to ask now that I'm thinking about it. Do we have a episode of My Hard Drive Died set up for him anytime in the near future?
I've been pinging him off and on now for 6 months, and he's either out of the country or very slammed. His industry is going through a little bit of a change right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just put it that way. And I'll say really quick, the Synolocker, the part that I find scary, they're also able to infect these NASs from Mac computers. So it's not just Windows computers. So,
well, because it's running whatever, you know, proprietary OS on it, right?
Yeah.
As long as you can get the infected files on there to take that over, then yeah, it doesn't matter how you get it on there.
Yeah, it's really scary. I will ping Scott again and see if he wants to see if he can find time to do a show. He's been in Australia a lot and traveling over the U.S. a lot, just doing classes.
Dude, if he's in Australia, he needs to bring us some of that bacon. Did you see that Australian bacon photo on Google Plus?
No, but I'm not sure he can take food out of the country.
It doesn't matter. He'll find a way, Scott. He could just literally, he could put it inside a MacBook or something. He needs to bring it. Dude, seriously, this bacon looked like miniature pork chops. I don't know. I can't remember who posted it, but it was this farm-raised hog, right? And then this thick bacon. And here's the thing. Out of the two of us, like, I'm not even, like, the bacon fan. And I saw this, and I was just like, wow. I need to book a flight to Australia. Like, I need to stop buying anything else and just book a flight and go there and get some of that bacon.
I'll look for it, but I didn't see it.
I've got a funny bacon and sausage story that I will tell next episode if enough people ping me on Google Plus asking me what's up with that bacon and sausage story. It's pretty funny, but I'm not going to tell it unless you guys get on there. So hit me up on Google Plus, Cody Cooper, that's CodyCooper. Ask me something along the lines of, hey, well, what's up with that sausage and bacon story? You do that, I'll tell it on the next episode.
Yeah, apparently we did miss Australian Bacon Week, I'm just saying.
Well, we didn't get our invitation. That's the problem.
Exactly. I blame Peter64.
Yep. And the thing is that there was also no Vegemite on it, so yeah, I could look at it and not throw up in my own mouth.
Well, I listened to Klaatu, and I learned there's now, to my knowledge now, there's a British alternative to Vegemite down in New Zealand, which sounds to me even nastier. I had to convince my wife, Australians still eat Vegemite. She tried to tell me they haven't ate Vegemite in years. I said, excuse me? Peter64 told me they do. He lives in Australia right now. So.
And she said,
who? We have to get the word out on this, Vegemite thing. And by we, I mean Peter64.
Yeah. No. They can stay there. I have more coarse feelings about Vegemite being brought over to the U.S. more than I do about that Ebola-infected tourist or doctor that's brought over here. I know, right?
Wow. I'm just going to shut my mouth.
I had to say it.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to make you mad.
All right. Okay. Speaking of not making me mad, why don't you tell us where we can find you, Dor?
The easiest place is just podnuts.com. You can follow me on Google+. I am there. I am posting. Also, reddit.com/r/podnuts. I am there. I am hanging out. It is slowly gaining momentum. We'll put it that way. And I'm going to look at getting a way to automatically publish my Git Pocket stuff somewhere on Reddit. Just so people can see all the links that I'm bookmarking.
There you go. That looks cool. Yeah, I've yet to be on there in any capacity, but I will soon because I'm on Reddit quite a bit more than I have been lately. Yeah, it's turning out to be fun. Just like with any internet resource, once you know how to navigate it and look for the stuff that you want to see, it's fantastic. But
reddit.com/r/origami. That's some pretty cool stuff.
Oh, wow. If you go to reddit.com/r/kappa with a large, capital K, that is a Street Fighter, S-talking session and all the ins and outs of the pro community. And it's like my daily soap opera. Like, some people read the paper. I just go there and I'm just like, oh, so-and-so lost his sponsor, you know. Yeah, just it's pretty crazy. Anyway, if you want to follow me online, you can go to Google+, look for me at Cody Cooper. You can send me an email to cody@podnuts.com. Like I said, seriously, if you want to hear that sausage and bacon story, it's pretty funny. I'm gonna quit talking about it. Hit me up on Google+. If I don't hear back from you before the next episode, then we'll do it on the following one. And if you want to send an email to the show, please send it to podcast@linuxtherestofus.com. If you'd like to send in a voicemail, please call 7076-PODNUT. That is 707-676-3688. Leave us a voicemail. We will play it on the show. Try to keep it to 60 seconds. 90 seconds is fine, but if it's going north of that, just cut it in half, make it two smaller ones. We'll either play them on the same show or, you know, concurrent shows. We love hearing from you folks, but we try to keep the show to a reasonable maximum, which I am dragging out by continuing to talk about how we like to keep it to a reasonable maximum, so I'm just going to stop talking about it. And finally, we mentioned several good products in the show, all of which can be purchased at podnets.com/Amazon, which is our Amazon affiliate link. If you're going to be making any purchases on Amazon anyway, please use podnets.com/Amazon. You're not paying a cent more than you would normally for those products, but Podnuts will get a small commission from that purchase, and that money goes in directly to help fund the network, because we do have some costs here. So for through the shopping you're going to do anyway, you're helping us out and keeping this this train going. So we really do appreciate your help in that endeavor. And as always, thank you very much for listening. And please remember that Linux is not just for the rest of us. It is for all of us. Good night.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.